This is the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. And it's with great pleasure that I welcome to the Book Club studios Paula Hawkins, author of the best-selling book, The Girl on the Train, a thriller that knocked my socks off and continues to knock the socks off of readers all around the world. Paula Hawkins, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you very much.
This thriller, The Girl on the Train, starts with Rachel, the primary character, but really revolves around the life of three women. And I found myself, as I was reading it, bouncing between their personalities and really getting inside their head. And after I finished it, Paula, I had to think, you as an author had quite a feat to have to stay in the heads of Rachel and Megan and Anna, and to keep them the same but separate. Mm. How, as a writer, did you approach that triple personality, shall we say?
It was tricky. I think Rachel, for me, was the easiest. She was a character I'd been thinking about for a while, so I was in her head already, and to write from her with her voice felt very natural to me, even though she's a dark and messed up person. But I felt like I knew her really well. And so I sort of wrote quite a bit of her narrative, and then I started on Megan separately, and I kind of interspersed them. But Megan was much more difficult for me. She's a difficult character to pin down in a way. She's this fickle, restless person. She kind of doesn't know herself yet. So I had to work hard at her. And then I moved on to the third narrative, which is Anna. And she was fun to write because she's tough, and she's selfish, and she's out for herself. So she was amusing to write.
Well, you mentioned Rachel was a character you'd had in mind for a while, and I found it very uncomfortable at times to be in Rachel's mind.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where the first question came from, because there are times that I'm just cringing inside as I read what's going on with her.
Yeah, she's I've been thinking about writing about someone who has memory problems. And this is what Rachel has memory problems because she drinks too much, so she has alcoholic blackouts. So that's kind of where the character started. It started with a memory loss and an alcoholic, and I kind of built on that. You know, crime fiction is awash with alcoholics. They're usually sort of lovable, roguish, middle-aged men. And that wasn't really what I wanted to do. I wanted to write quite a grim portrayal of alcoholism, because I think it probably is quite grim. So yeah, I didn't really flinch from the nastiness, but I understand that isn't always... she's not a comfortable person to read. And yeah, she wasn't that comfortable to live with either.
Well, but part of it is, as you're reading, you know, that discomfort is so much part of the character and you know, such a part of the story that I guess it's looking at looking at a traffic accident.
Yeah.
I just had to keep on reading. So.
Yeah, I think there is an element of that. It's quite compelling to read somebody falling apart. But yes, as we also see her start to claw her way back too, so there is some redemption.
Well, as you've faced readers and reaction to the book, are any of these three women at the forefront of who people relate to or who people are curious about?
Well, I think there are really vastly differing reactions to the characters, particularly to Rachel. Some people just cannot stand her. Some people find her too grim to read, and people find her incredibly frustrating. I mean, she is meant to be frustrating because addicts are. She keeps getting better, getting worse, making the same mistakes over and over. But I think a lot of people, even if they don't identify with the worst of her, they can see a sort of vulnerability in her, her loneliness. And an awful lot of people who've lived in big cities have had that moment of kind of urban alienation, loneliness in their lives. And I think I think most people can actually, they feel sorry for her. They can empathize to some degree. And yeah, so I think she's the character that people sort of think about the most. She's the most vivid. But yeah, some people like Anna, some people are rooting for Anna all the way through. And yeah, I mean, I think that the good thing is that people do have had strong reactions, and that's what you want as an author.
Paula Hawkins is the author of the best-selling novel, The Girl on the Train. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. Paula, when I first picked up your book to read just after it was released some time ago, I read that first line about the pile of clothes by the railroad track. And I have to say, my heart was seized with dread just from that line. Where did that image come from? Because it, you know, it's that quintessential first line that grabs the reader. But you know, it made me quiver in fear, even though there may or may not be something wrong with those clothes.
I think that that's really for me, because I do that all the time. If you see something discarded on in the street, you know, it's how sometimes you do an item of clothing or a shoe, I always get a kind of shiver and think, ugh. Even though it probably is just somebody's thrown away their rubbish right. and something's fallen out. But it always makes me think, oh God, why is there only one shoe? Where's the other shoe? And it does sort of, it conjures up bleak images. And so I think I wanted to put the Rachel sees this from a train. I wanted to put the reader immediately into that frame of mind, that kind of dark frame of mind that this signifies something bad.
Well, it left quite a permanent impression for me, I'll tell you about it. And I had to ask about the train too, because I you know, despite that kind of dreaded open to the story, I have to say, in the first dozens of pages, I became very comfortable with kind of the rhythm of the commute, where, you know, you had that morning and afternoon or morning and evening type of rhythm to it. Why a train? I mean, why did you decide that Rachel would be on the train? What came the first, the train or the girl?
The train, the idea of seeing something from your commute is something I've been thinking about for a really long time, because I used to commute in and out of London a lot. And my train used to break down at a certain point, and I could see into people's houses. And I did yes. always used to stare in. This is a long time ago. This is before everybody had cell phones in their hands. And I used to stare into these houses, and I was always hoping that something interesting was going to happen, which it never did, obviously. But it got me thinking. And that sort of Rear Window-ish idea came into my head. What would you do if you witnessed just a glance of something? And, you know, what sort of witness would you be? So that came first, and then I had the idea for Rachel, and I put her on the train, and it all opened up. But I think actually that the rhythm of the commute was very useful as a device for the book. It gets you into this framework, as you say. It kind of, you know, it lulls the reader into maybe a false sense of security. They think they're on this little journey, and then suddenly they're kind of jolted out of it when the train stops. So. It was a useful device. I'm also a fan of trains. I like trains. And I think we have culturally a kind of association between trains and crime novels too, sort of Agatha Christie, Patricia Highsmith, all those kind of things. They go hand in hand.
Just no big cloud of steam.
No, that would be nice, that romantic image.
But. Well, yeah, it's funny. I was going to ask you about the trains, because I did feel a sense of love for trains as I was reading the story.
And they're not obviously the romantic trains that they used to be. The, you know, commuter trains are actually deeply unromantic, but there's still something about the way you're all thrown together. You sit in this quite confined space with strangers, but strangers that you see on a regular basis, so you have a kind of weird sense of connection with them, even if it's not a real sense of connection.
Well, and obviously you made lots of great observations while you're doing your own commute, because you really captured the atmosphere in that train car, whether it's been raining outside or another train's broke down. Sometimes the car is crowded, sometimes it's not. And that was, sometimes I felt the closeness of the crowd when the carriage came to a stop.
Yeah.
But you were originally a journalist for a number of years, and then turned to fiction. What was the transition? Why the transition, Paul?
Yeah, I was a financial journalist for a number of years.
Okay, enough said.
Precisely. I'd kind of had enough, and the markets had turned, had taken a sharp turn for the worse, and there wasn't as much money around for freelance as I was freelancing, and I was offered an opportunity to write a book, which I wrote under a pseudonym, and which was kind of a romantic women's fiction thing, what they call chick lit. That was the opportunity came about, and I thought, yeah, why not? I'll give it a try. I'd always been interested in writing fiction, though I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself as a fiction writer. But because I was sort of commissioned to do it, it was quite a nice transition from journalism to fiction, because it felt almost initially like a journalistic commission. And I wrote four books under a pseudonym, but I decided ultimately that romantic fiction was not really my genre, and then I switched to thrillers.
I was going to say, I had noticed in the bio in the back of the book, this is your first thriller.
Yes.
I was going to ask if there was other fiction. And what do you enjoy about the dabbling in the fiction world versus the journalistic approach to
it? I'm much more comfortable making things up than trying to eke the truth out of people. I don't think I was ever good at persuading people to tell me the truth, so I'm much better at making things up.
The Girl on the Train, the best-selling novel by Paula Hawkins, joining me for a conversation here this morning on the Book Club at 91.7. I know those mystery writers, and I've said this before on the show, and I'm sorry to listeners if I'm repeating myself, but I know mystery readers can be very particular people. What has been the reaction for readers of this thriller?
Mostly positive, yeah. I mean, the comment I get most often is that people couldn't put it down, which is a good thing for a thriller. It has a page turner quality. I think people identify with that sort of voyeuristic impulse that Rachel has. I think a lot of people like looking into other people's houses and imagining their lives. I think people find the character of Rachel compelling in one way or another. She's an unusual protagonist. So overwhelmingly, it's been a positive response.
Well, it's been very interesting when you mentioned earlier about some people, you know, can't stand Rachel. Mm. And, you know, I did, I already mentioned having several cringeworthy moments, shall we say, in the story. But then I began to pull for her, and it really is, you know, she can be an inspiration as much as being dissuasive to her behavior.
Yeah, ultimately, you see her start to fight back a bit. You see that there is something else there. If she just puts the bottle down, there is a woman underneath all this that had perhaps a stronger character, that has perhaps a positive future. So I think there is hope. Not great swathes of it, but glimmers.
I'm always surprised about when I ask this question, the varying answers to it. When it comes to being a writer and whether you have a routine or a sense of rhythm when it comes to your writing, I just talked to a first-time novelist, Vu Tran, who said he starts writing at midnight with a thermos of hot tea and some ginger candy and writes until 5 a.m. because he writes crime noir and likes the dark thing. You know, so people have, you know, different... What kind of writer are you, Paul?
I'm afraid I'm much more boring. I think it's years of being a freelance journalist. I get up, you know, at a normal time and sit down at my desk and write. I don't exactly work 9 to 5, but it's not far off. So, yeah, I just work. I have a little study in my house. And I think I work best if I treat it like a normal job. You know, this is my job. I have to get on and do it and not be too kind of writerly and artistic about it.
Well, with the success of The Girl on the Train, how is your writing these days?
This year has been a difficult one for writing because I've done a lot of traveling. There have been a lot of interruptions. So I've yet to find a way of juggling the two very well. I have written. I'm in the middle of writing my second novel, but it hasn't gone as quickly as I'd hoped. But after this tour, I'm hoping to get back to it and shut out the rest of the world and just write for a few months.
Paula Hawkins, author of The Girl on the Train. What are you reading right now?
I am reading Fates and Furies by Lauren Groff. I've just started that yesterday on the plane and read some more this morning. It's brilliant.
Oh, well, you're fitting right in here since that's the pick for the NPR book club.
Yes,
it does. Really nice. And good book, too.
But, yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk this morning, and I appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you very much for having me.
Paula Hawkins. Her best-selling novel is The Girl on the Train. It is quite a ride. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And this is the Book Club at 91.7.